to Ollie Butterworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. The guest this week, comedian, MC, and bearded bundle of fun, it's Jack Samuel Warner. This is an open letter to my loyal, unquestioning, adoring podcast fans. Hey guys, I would like to take this opportunity to apologize for the extended absence of the show. I understand all too well the disappointment, the hurt, and the fear this would have caused to you, my beautiful and overwhelmingly large fan base, and there is no excuse. The fact that my time and energy are now heavily taxed by my work in a hospice for the sick, needy, and dying does not excuse me from taking responsibility for depriving you all of your favourite podcast, and it's time I got my priorities in order. For it is you, my hordes of obsessive podcast fanatics, who must always come first. I hope, in time, you can forgive me. Lots and lots and lots of love, Ollie Butterworth. Hello, and welcome to Ollie Butterworth's downloadable weekly podcast program with me, Ollie Butterworth. We're back after quite a long delay, a longer delay than I thought it was going to be. But as I said, I am working quite hard at the moment and gigging quite a bit, whereas I wasn't doing either of those things when I started the project. I actually figured out that the only time I have spare to edit, really, at the moment, is if I took my laptop with me and edited on my two-hour commute on the bus in and out of work every day. So I might start doing that just to get through them and start getting them out again, as miserable as that sounds. But don't worry, I found a way to explain away the delay as though it was always planned by retroactively claiming that the first 14 episodes count as series one of the show. So I'm now relabeling and going back and putting series one onto all of them, which makes this the season premiere of season two. This makes the whole thing a little bit more exciting. It doesn't feel so negligent anymore. Now it just seems kind of cool and kind of, yeah? Well, anyway, what a way to start Series 2. I have a hell of a guest in the form of Jack Samuel Warner. Not just in the form of Jack Samuel Warner, he actually is Jack Samuel Warner. He's a terrific stand-up comedian and a lot of people's favourite MC. And also, he's one of these people that seems to have the correct attitude about more or less everything. Seems quite sound and kind of in a good place mentally. So I actively resent him for that. I also resent him for the fact that quite a lot of people seem to have immensely warm things to say about him and very great feelings of kind of warmth in general towards him. So, you know, he's one of those people. But anyway, he's very, very funny, and I want to let the episode speak for itself. No, we're back, guys. That's all I've got to say. Enjoy! Jack Samuel Warner, hello.
Hello.
Now, you've got three names. How do you justify that?
I justify that I've got a certificate that has the names written on it. It's official. It looks quite old. I'm not sure what it's for, but okay, that is where I've got the names from.
Yeah, but other perhaps less pretentious people would have just been called Jack Warner.
And they have been. They have been. Oh, there's been many of them. There's a long list of Jack Warners.
Yeah, don't you want to continue in that proud tradition?
Well, proud is already a term that I'm not particularly happy with.
You've given people two, if not three, Samuel
extra syllables to say.
So you're saying it's definitely Samuel.
Samuel. Or
Samuel.
Yes, that's how I always insist
not
on saying.
Not Samuel.
No.
Samuel.
Samuel. That's just...
Samuel.
Lazy, isn't it?
I do speak with quite a common accent. I am from the Essex.
It's like people who say similar instead of similar.
You see, those two things sounded identical to me. Could you repeat
yes,
them?
Exactly. So, the Samuel is there to differentiate you from other Jack Warners, is that right?
It's, I don't really need differentiating from some of them. A lot of them are dead, of the Jack Warners that have been and ever will be.
Yeah, so if people thought, maybe it's that Jack Warner I'm seeing, but that one's dead, he wouldn't be performing stand-up here.
So you're saying that me having a name of a dead person should be an incentive for someone to come along and not see the person that they think I am or am not yet?
I think you've overly complicated it. I'm saying that the fact that they're dead means that the people at the show will probably not think it's that Jack Warner they're seeing.
But only some of them are dead, and some of them have yet to come into being.
Maybe if you systematically worked through all of the Jack Warners and killed them all, then we could be spared some syllables.
Well, I'm very much up for killing. You know, I don't want to get that established. That's the go-to solution.
Hmm.
But is it always right? Yes. Yes, it is always right. But is it always practical?
Sometimes when a guest has said something that I think will get them in a lot of hot water, I kind of leave a big pause to allow myself editing room to make it seem a lot worse. So that was what that was.
And that would obviously help people judge, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Judge time.
Yeah, thank you.
A judge window, I like to call it.
But I guess what you're saying is instead of Samuel, it'd be more useful to have Jack... open brackets, the person that will be performing this evening, not another Jack Warner, close brackets, Warner.
No, I mean, that's self-defeating. My thing is the syllable to name ratio.
So I could just portmanteau the outside names that are bracketing Samuel to just Jorna.
Hmm.
Jorna. Jorna, a little bit like Jethro. I could be Jorna. Welcome to the stage, Jorna. It is quicker. You're right. It is quicker. It's cut down.
You also look a little bit like Jethro.
A little bit like Jethro because of the similarities.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
In the humour.
In the humour.
In the jokes.
And the accent.
Yeah.
And now the name.
You do primarily focus on a sort of West Country audience, don't you?
Well, you know, I'll go where people ask me to.
I've heard that.
And they don't ask me to, but I imagine what it would be like if I was asked. To go somewhere, and then I follow that as an instinct, not a ritual.
So you're already unravelling. This is perfect.
Well,
before you arrived, I thought because I don't know if you can tell from my voice, listeners, but I've got a ruddy cold, and I thought maybe my predatory instincts would be dulled, and that I would give you a relatively easy time compared to the other guests. But actually, in the opening 5 minutes. I've got you in quite a lot of hot water and been far harsher to you to compensate this.
I think it's sharpened. Have you taken perhaps a Lemsip? I know that always gives me an edge.
I've taken some Paracetamol Plus.
Ooh, is this a tablet form or a soluble?
It was a tablet, no messing around, but it also had caffeine and aspirin.
Oh, well, if you're looking for an answer, I think you've found one, friend.
I'm also two coffees in.
Into what?
Into this session.
Into this session, a coffee session.
This is what I like to call these meetings. Now, I noticed, Jack, I've asked you to create a list of things that you love, but also things that you hate. And you have about 10 things under the love list, and one very specific and relatively banal choice for the hate list. Now, it seems to me that you're trying to make a mockery of the whole format. Was that your intention?
Mockery is maybe too strong. Shambles, a general disarray.
Because really you've only given me the option to piss all over things that you love rather than justify things that you hate, which would usually be my role here, you see.
I think you'll, especially with the coffees, you should be in a prime position to piss liberally.
Don't get me wrong, I'm very much looking forward to pissing liberally, very liberally, over everything that you hold dear. But is this because you're not a particularly hateful person?
one would hope that the hate within one has been diminished since the pain, the horror, the adolescence, very angry time.
My interviewer instinct would usually tell me to jump on that and try and delve into it, exploit it, expand it until you're weeping in front of me. But something tells me that you were being facetious.
You see, you're going to have to explain what some of these words mean. You're leaping in with words of more than one syllable. Samuel
facetious,
or Samuel, I'm happy
comes
with.
From, but... comes from the root feces, i.e.
Now we're talking.
Full of shit, you see.
Yes, right. Well, it's hard to answer that other than exposing my inner shit.
Could you?
Well, possibly not in these trousers, but I think you've hit the nail firmly in the area with the hammer that you need to hit it, and by that I mean I think it's probably nicer to like things than not to like them.
Mm.
But I'm very much aware that in very much the outside world, and I'd like to very much make the listeners aware that I'm gesturing to the outside world whilst I'm saying that, that may not be the most practical of outlooks.
It is an unusual outlook, especially for a comedian. I found the other way is usually how it goes. People have a difficulty in establishing anything at all in this world that they love enough to talk about. But they're full of rants, they're full of loathing. And that seems to be the standard for the comedians I've had on so far.
And would you say that they're really struggling with finding themselves in an uncaring, godless, meaningless cosmos?
Well, that's for them to say.
That's for them to say. Have they said it?
I haven't had any tears yet, and I've been greatly disappointed about that.
Well, this is something we can work on.
I think I got close with Adam Larter.
Well, Adam Tearsy Larter, yeah. I call him. Not to his face, that would be rude, but certainly behind his back, to myself. I say it to myself, really.
Yeah,
everyone.
And very publicly on a podcast.
Shit!
How long have you been doing stand-up, Jack Samuel Warner?
With the three syllables. I have been... performing, standing on a stage with people's wanting from me for sort of just over four years at this point.
And how's it all going? What's your stand? What's next? How are you coping? Is it a good decision? Is it a waste of time? Is it merely 4 years into a 10-year plan in which you take over the world? Or is it a sort of flim-flam shambles of unrelated gigs that ultimately don't really end up in a career?
I think, by my count, you've asked me 8 questions there, and the answer to all of them is yes.
Okay.
I've got a very short attention span, and I've not only forgotten the questions, but what your name is, where I am, and why I'm not allowed to leave.
Well, we'll get to that in good time. What I'm asking is what your mental outlook is on the stand-up. Is it going well? What's your state? What part of the path do you think that you're on?
The path? Of the path, I'm probably...
Near the geraniums.
Near the geraniums, and just getting towards the bit... There's a clearing up ahead, and there I can see someone set up... Probably in the National Trust, they've set up a little cafulette, a small. It's not just a hatch where they're serving coffee and tea, very poor standard coffee. It is a tiny caf. So there's a few picnic tables, and around those picnic tables are people judging me.
I'm trying to work out whether we're still speaking metaphorically here, or whether you've used this opportunity to satirise the ineffectual nature of the question posed.
I thought at this point we were talking about parks.
Okay. Well, let's go with that then. How do you like parks?
I realise now that I should have added parks to the list of loves, and I haven't. Is it possible to add at this stage?
Absolutely not. Your love list is fit to burst. If you would like to decide you hate parks.
Does that mean it gets to go on a list?
It does, yeah.
I hate parks. Unquestionably.
It's going on the list. It's going written in the thing.
Bloody grass.
Jack, did you do as much emceeing as you used to do?
Yes, I do. I do it a lot. I like it. I like it. Hmm. Occasionally, it can be really bad.
Okay.
But generally, it's a very, very nice thing to do.
When was the last time it was really, really bad?
Oh, I can remember the time before last. That was down in Balham. And I can remember. I've only ever nearly walked away from a gig once, and that was emceeing. Yeah, that was. I could be criticised, and I think I have been, you know, thoroughly already I'm going to do the bunny ears interview. Okay, can you audibly? I'm just doing that. I've gestured, and
I can vouch for the gesture.
If you could give me gesture vouchers,
that would be great. It was a scathing gesture.
It was. You know, we've all seen the bunny ears, but it was particularly the curve of the index and forefinger,
really
quite,
tense in the finger,
quite satirical in a way. I can be criticised for overrunning as an MC, and that on many occasions is true. I would always counter that with the fact that I'm trying to make sure that the next act has the best welcome to the stage. I can say that I'm patronising the audience in the way that I get them to shout their absolute arse off. But one thing that I would not be criticised of is not putting the effort in. There have been very few gigs ever when I'm MCing that if it's going badly, I've not tried every trick I know, every piece of material I've stolen from another act, just to get back a little bit of energy.
I can vouch for this, actually. I can remember being at a gig where you were MCing and feeling very bad about myself because I caught a glimpse of your clipboard, and these whole list of jokes and scores and ticks and tabulations and all sorts of stuff you put, and it was specific to that gig too. It wasn't just your standard sheet. It was obvious that you'd thought of what you were going to do. I think a lot of people go out and just kind of wing it, don't they?
Yeah,
because they're sort of skilled
performers. I think that was actually a Sudoku. But if it was it words or word Sudoku,
actually there were a lot of numbers.
That'd be a great idea for a word Sudoku. Like there's like I don't know clues for the words to go in. Still a framework.
I think you've just invented the word search.
Oh, getting me! That's a good name for it.
Mm.
Okay, cool. Let's look into it. We'll dragon den it. We'll get Denzel Washington behind it, and never look back.
As you can probably tell, Jack very rarely makes any sense. So recording the podcast may be difficult. Please do bear with us, and I'll try and dredge some kind of lucidity out of him. He came in barely wearing any clothes. I've managed to coax him into a semi-dressed state and got him to face the right way.
I'm 60% water.
Are we all 60% water?
I don't know, I've just had an extra glass, so I could be more right now. I guess it would vary.
Do you need a wee wee?
When don't I? I've got the bladder of a 2-year-old. I should really give it back. That's probably one of the first jokes I wrote that I used in conversation, and it's not very funny, and it's very cruel.
It doesn't...
But you were asking a question.
It doesn't... It doesn't conjure up a very nice image.
No, it conjures up the image of a 2-year-old without a bladder.
Well, and you holding a kind of bloody, pulsating sack.
Very much as a trophy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Don't open with it.
Don't open with it. The classic. Please welcome to the stage the man holding a child's bladder like a trophy aloft like Jules Rimet, Mr. Jack... Warner. You were saying you wanted to know about the really bad one.
Oh, yeah.
I was just saying the criticism is that I'd give out and shout, and I just remember there was one gig I did one of the night I actually ran, and I just thought I was screaming. Like, I often even at the Cavendish, I'll be screaming so much to get them just going at like a 10 out of 10, then 11, 12. I'll come off stage and I have a head rush because I just shouted so much and lost oxygen. I just remember it was a tough gig and I was just shouting, just trying to get any energy in the room for the poor act who was on next, who I think every night like, everyone was brilliant. And I just saw this guy and the thing, he couldn't even be bothered. He was just tapping his... I don't know if you hear that. This is charitable to the noise that he was making, just slapping his thigh.
Yeah.
And I almost just walked. Just went. And I probably should
can't
have.
Really do that. Which as an going. MC, though. What no. would happen after an act?
The night would have improved.
Oh, okay.
Just because I'm not
well,
there.
By ending. Yeah, by grinding ending. To no, a halt.
Yeah. And it was a bit that... MCing is beautiful when it's a lovely little time and all the little faces are looking at you. It's terribly lovely to go back out there and say hello again. Mm. And the nights when the audiences give you a little bit of leeway to have a muck about, it's terribly exciting.
Mm.
And it's joyous, and you feel that you've guided them on this journey. It may have not been a journey they wanted to go on, like a canal boat holiday in August. Not August, that would be lovely. January. January, no one wants to be on a canal boat. The limousines of the water in January.
Are you one of the regular hosts of the Cavendish show?
Yeah, I do it every Tuesday.
With Gemma, is Gemma still doing it?
I'm the Gemma, yeah, did I take over from Gemma? No, I took over from Dave, who used to run it when it was just him. David Armitage, who's...
Oh, is he not running it anymore?
No, it's Harriet Kelmsley on the Monday... Me on the Tuesday, and Paul Langton, Sir Paul of Langton, on the Wednesday.
So there's three nights now.
Oh, yeah. Bloody there's that hell. Many new bloody ruddy acts. And you can always pick them, because they've got that little sparkle in their eyes that eventually will turn dead and cold.
Oh, I can't wait. I love watching it.
Yeah,
there's
a little sparkle. Watching it.
Just there, just turn up new.
If you can be at that gig where you see the hope die, then... It's the only real thing I laugh at now.
Yeah, no, absolutely, me too. I mean, you can tell the new acts because they seem to have kind of a need to analyse every gig too. They're kind of talking excitedly about their last one. And from hearing them talk, you'd think they just played the Apollo, and then you find out it's fucking pear-shaped or something.
Hey,
man, it's
hey,
lovely that...
Whoa there, whoa there.
I'm not denigrating pear-shaped. It's
firmly,
one of the most fun nights
I've said it
had.
Once, and I'll say it again, and in fact, I'm just about to say it now.
Yeah.
I truly believe the spirit of live comedy lives in that little bunker at Pear-Shaped. It is chained to the radiator, and it wants to leave, but it is there, and that's where it dwells.
Okay, for the audience members that have never heard of Pear-Shaped, would you care to explain?
Pear-Shaped is a comedy gig run by Brian and Crystal and Anthony Miller that takes place every Wednesday night at the Fitzroy Tavern, Fitzroyville, London. And some people play it and never play it again. I did my second ever gig there, and I go back as often as they'll have me.
They list it as the second worst comedy club.
Second worst, because statistically the worst one closed down last week.
Oh, right.
So they must be, it can't be the worst one, because there's one that's just closed down.
Oh, is that the thinking?
Thinking is a very charitable phrase. the logic would be even more so.
I always thought the joke was that the Comedy Store was the worst.
No, I don't believe it. I think there's whatever's just finished running, because there's always a club that's had its last
just closed
gig.
Down.
Whatever, say, the average run time of a gig is 18 months.
But Pear-Shaped just keeps on going.
Keeps on trucking.
Very little audience, usually.
It really varies. I've been in there when it's absolutely rammed. I've been in there when it's two people. But to say that there's a correlation between that and atmosphere isn't the case. It can be fantastic with small people in there. Mm. But it's... You know, there's an argument that early on, no gig is a bad gig. And just what you were saying there reminded me that sort of the more gigs you do, the more that individual gig is a smaller percentage of the total gigs you've done.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
So when you start off...
I won't explain it further then.
You think, oh, you know, a quarter of all my gigs was that one where I did all right, and
yeah,
therefore
exactly.
I'm clinging to that.
Exactly.
Whereas now it's like, I barely remember... Barely remember the gig I did last week.
Yeah, it all merges into
all the
one
joyous died.
Glorious lineup.
Endless dirge.
Oh, you've seen my new hour of crying on a bus.
Jack, you've got so many choices on your love list that we better start with the top one.
Okay.
What is it?
It is Narnia, The Chronicles Thereof by C.S. Lewis, and I almost more specifically the BBC adaptations, which I believe were very late 80s, early 90s? No, yeah, late 80s on the BBC Television.
But Jack, those are things for children.
You're absolutely spot on, and I was once a smaller man in child form, and so what I think you really need to hit upon is why I still love them.
Yes, exactly.
I can only think that I've not developed in any significant way from 1989.
Okay, well, that explains it. Well, what is it about Narnia that you like so much?
It's a super magical world with a magic lion.
But is it the heavy-handed Christian overtones?
I can remember very specifically when I found out that it was based on Christianity, and that's probably the most disappointed I've ever been in my life.
Mm.
Because I was very not into that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And it was on Antiques Roadshow, which, ironically, was the show that was always on before Narnia, and the Antiques Roadshow theme tune always gets me excited, not in that way, but sometimes, because that means Narnia is about to come on afterwards on a Sunday.
And you hold no truck with the big budget adaptations?
It's nice to see that world. I'll watch them, of course I will. But again, the annoying thing is, with what happened with the BBC, you won't see that full all seven stories come to the screen. Well, that's interesting. They've kind of done the ones which feature the four children and then their cousin, which are the easier ones, and then you've got stuff like The Horse and His Boy, which is probably my favourite, which takes place entirely in Narnia and only features people from this realm as kings and queens in Narnia. And you've also got The Magician's Nephew, which is very much between worlds, and that's quite nice, the dawning of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we'll ever see them, but no, for me, very much it's the BBC adaptations with like the giant beavers, because they had to put a man in a beaver suit.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that there is still inherent quality in this series, and that's what's kept you enthusiastic about them, or is it the case that you watch them a lot when you were a kid, and so you've got this sort of built-in fondness and nostalgia for them, and so even though it's a pile of shit, you still appreciate it now?
Well, you know,
do you think that coming to it now, you would think, actually, this is really good stuff?
I think I'd stand by it. I think, admit it, you can be nostalgic for any old shit, you know, even a really good shit. If it brings back, if it's evocative.
Mm.
There's definitely a part of it that's just like, oh, it's a big lion, quite like lions. And it very much, it's a beautiful, beautiful, magical realm, really. And I think there must be something about just going, I used to spend a lot of time in wardrobes. Which I think may have played into it somewhat. And to this day, if I ever am in a wardrobe that I don't know well, although there's not many I don't know well these days, I will always just check the back, just to be on the safe side. I don't really have religion in any sense, but I do think Narnia would be quite nice.
Jack, do you actually check for Narnia?
Well, to say I check specifically for Narnia would be a bit short-sighted, but I check for a general portal to a magical realm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so far, haven't found it?
No. Mainly clothes.
I thought I would put on another one of your choices.
Yeah, look at you with the internet.
In the background.
It was a view. That's an incredible segue. It's quite exciting.
Absolutely. Would you care to explain what this is, this noise?
This is it's a beautiful noise. It's an absolutely lovely noise. It's one by Johann Sebastian Bach, which I can't really say. But that doesn't stop. Unfortunately, you don't have to say the person's name to listen to the piece of music, which is fine. And I don't really know classical music. I'm a bit of a... is Philistine the right word?
Yeah.
Phil Collins. I'm a bit of a Phil Collins when it comes to...
Certainly.
A bit of a Philly cheesesteak when it comes to Philadelphia. I'm a bit... Brother City...
You're filibustering.
When it comes to the City of Brotherly Love, I think this is just a... It's... on the surface, it just it builds absolutely beautifully.
And it's actually lending what you're saying, it's, even right now, a sense of gravitas.
Auto-gravitas. Sandra Bullock gravitas kind of thing to it, isn't it?
If you were doing a stand-up show and suddenly this was the bit where you talk about your dead dad, you'd want this in, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I'd have to kill dad first. I'd probably... Oh, it would actually be a counterpoint to a murder, wouldn't it? Mm. A bloody, ruddy murder.
That would be the twist, ending.
Yeah, you could bang my head repeatedly against this microphone, forcing it through my skull, but it would still be a beautiful, poignant moment.
Absolutely.
And it would make a comment rather than just be the brutal, animalistic, instinctive killing that you would enact.
Well, and if you had murdered your dad, every show could end with you being rearrested, which would be the perfect... Edinburgh would be taken by storm.
I like the way that you went up at the end of the thing to do this bit, but we need to do this. This is the best. This is this. Ah!
And Jack's descended into some sort of reverie. Has this been used heavily on films? It seems very familiar.
Yeah, let's face it. If it's a classical or a cultural reference, I will have got it from a TV show.
Yeah.
Let's face it, I'm not quite entirely sure where. But it reminds me, if I to get very deep about this, it reminds you of that thing where people do talk about, there must be a God if you listen to the works of Beethoven. And I always find that a weird argument. I find, surely it's more magical. And I'd use the word magical in the same way I do about Narnia. Is it purely that if we are just all these little tiny little bits of stuff that put together in this weird, crazy order, isn't it just truly, absolutely sort of awesome in the proper words and struck with awe that they managed to put themselves into all these things that became alive, and the whole chain led to this one man whose brain was configured in such a way that he was able to put down these little notes on a bit of paper and make that happen? Surely that's the more absolutely mind-blowing thing than just saying Magic Man done it.
Mm.
Which I'm paraphrasing Robin Hood said, but just oh, it's a bit... I often think magic is just kind of that, you know, as an automatic answer, but isn't it magical in that sense? And it just really sounds nice to my ears.
Yeah, I don't care for it. I'm going to turn it off.
Okay!
I don't like it. I find it repetitive and trite.
Tripe.
Moving on. What's your next choice for your love list? Can you remember?
I can talk about any one of them. What would be the next best one to talk? It's just that's all. Just
you've got Edinburgh here.
Edinburgh. The Edinburgh Castle. Oh, I love Edinburgh. Yeah, Edinburgh. Yeah. Only in August. I've never been any other
only
time.
In August.
Only in August. So I've already limited it to one. So in fact, I like 1/12 of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
In a temporal sense.
But for many people, performers included, Edinburgh might be considered the worst possible of all nightmares.
Yeah.
But you don't ascribe to that.
No, I've been going out the last 8 years, and I think I'm using the word magical more than I thought it would, which I think shows that I have a very limited group of words, a limited range of words,
yeah.
Unvaried collection of words.
Mm.
I don't have very good, lots of them. I don't have lots of words together.
Many
I haven't got any
them,
words
yeah.
to describe the fact that I've got lots of words together.
Mm.
Or a lack of words.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lack of words.
An education.
But it's a place, it's kind of spanned the time of me just watching stand-up and then doing it as well. And so I've never done a full run, so I've not done the month, so I may be completely biased by that fact that I've only been up there sort of longest for about a week and a half. And I've never done the daily grind of doing the same gig, your own gig, every day. But, A, you know, it's what a great idea, a beautiful... I know it obviously evolved more naturally than the way I'm talking, but, a beautiful city, with, you know, obviously with all its ups and downs, physical and topographical. Topological.
You've said both. I'll edit in the correct one.
Edit in. If you could do your voice over the top, though, just like topographical.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
I'll make sure I do that.
In fact, just if ever you thought of saying, "Oh, I could have used a better word there," just feel free. In fact, if you want to very much
I'll just dub over the entire thing with
but
better.
I'll do your voice like this for some reason.
Yeah, well, that's how I hear myself. Yeah. So I don't know why you're making a point of saying that. You see, that to me sounds spot on, and I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure that I'm not speaking now. Because I can hear my outside voice, I can hear another voice. So I just hear voices.
I'm just hearing
voices.
Yeah.
And then you put a massive arts festival in there as well, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then there's things, and people are passionate about my thing, but about lots of things. My thing is comedy.
You've been up with a show, your own show, or
not
a
my own
split
show?
This, show?
Yeah, not ever in a split show, just doing spots here and there.
Okay,
so I've performed up there the last 3 years. This is my first one, and I'm splitting an hour
with
John Pendle, aka International Mr. Lever,
2003.
Two beardy men. We'll rub our beards together, ignite a fire of laughter, and then cry into a bucket.
I've heard that.
Yeah. No, we're going to do... we're splitting an hour. I'm taking the first minute, he's taking the second. I'm taking the third, then he's taking the fourth. He's taking the fifth, then the sixth, the seventh and eighth. I'm taking the eighth, ninth and tenth. Then he's taking...
You've got a set piece.
Yes, set piece. In which I set a jelly. Which you'd think take longer, but I've got a fairly cold persona and outlook and fridge.
Yeah.
And out of the three, the cold fridge is the thing that really helps the jelly... set.
Perfect. Well, I've often thought that Edinburgh would be a wonderful place if you'd never had to go out and fly a day after day. So maybe this will be the Edinburgh that pops that bubble.
That really breaks me, not only as a performer, but as a person.
Let's hope so. Because, I mean...
And I want to clarify, not breaks as in, he's the new star! Like, destroys.
Destroys.
Like, snaps.
Spiritually.
Like, not just snaps, so the ends are breaking literally in two, like a bonio.
Metaphorically and literally.
Literally, but especially literally.
Because, you know, once you... I've often thought that when you get to the stage where you've got street teams, you can just go and you go see shows during the day or not, and you just go and do your own show at night, and then that's it. That would be wonderful. But the thing that ruins Edinburgh for me as a performer is having to go out and face the apathy of the crowd day after day for hours on end, trying to get someone to give a shit about your rubbish little show.
I've flyered in Hampstead Heath. And that is incredibly soul-destroying.
Why specifically Hampstead Heath?
Well, that's we're near a gig where I was...
Do you think there's something characteristic to the event, to the locale?
Yeah, there were some people there.
Mm.
And you know, some people would take up, just give you a diatribe about the nature of stand-up comedy and what I'd specifically done wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this woman said, "Well, it's all rubbish, you know, it's Frankie Boyle, blah, blah." And she said other words there. She didn't just finish her argument like that, because I think I could have dealt with that argument at that point. It was like, "Well, come along, try, see a show." You know, the classic firing upbeat. Come along, see a show. Like,
we'd love to have you there.
"Oh, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to waste my money on that." "Well, just coming for free then." And she looks at me and I said, "Well, now you're just downgrading your night." So what I wanted to do was say, "How dare you!" But I just said, because I'm quite polite and retiring, I said, okay, bye.
Do you feel that you pussed out?
That I...
pussed out.
Pussed out.
Mm.
Pussed out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sounds like you should have taken that woman down. But then she came back, and I'm very happy to say we've been married 3 years. Not to each other, to other people. Okay. I'm not married. She's married. She's happy. She's moved on. She doesn't know who I am. I don't know who she is. I don't know who I am.
I don't really need to work at all to unravel you.
No, I'm...
You simply unravel automatically. You're self-unravelling.
I'm self-unravelling. I take all the stress out of having to take someone's personality down because of the inherent character flaws.
Mm-hmm.
There's many flaws. It's a multi-story, and each one's got a hole in it. It's a tube. I'm a tube of a building. Not even a building. I'm a tube. I'm a Pringles tube, but the other end's come off. So you've lost your Pringles.
You see, what Jack's doing here is essentially what Trevor Locke does on stage for an hour. This constant rephrasing of the last thing that he
you
said.
You see, what the difference there would be Trevor's skill, finesse, some would say inherent talent, and personality. And I've just stopped myself stopping talking. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense, I've just carried on, and even now you're not stopping me. So who's the real
Slim Shady?
Yeah.
And will he stand up?
Well, will he just bloody get on and stand up? Eh? Will he? Probably won't.
Jack, I'm going to look up your next choice to give you some structure. Next thing that you say that you love,
yeah,
is
fireworks.
I can tell by your voice that you're a fan. Again, look, they're just like they're just big bang, boom, bright light. Yeah, I'm quite simplistic in the audio visual. It's pretty. How can you know? I'm going to turn the tables. Not literally. There's a lot of equipment on it. But if I was to turn the table. What's wrong with a little old Catherine wheel? There's wrong with a Roman candle?
There's nothing wrong with either of those things. There might be something wrong with putting
rainbows and fireworks
on a list of things that you love.
But I do.
For a kind of adult comedy podcast, is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, you've said
hard hitting. You've said hard
adult comedy and podcast. Mm. Now, there's three words, okay. One of which I don't understand, mm-hmm. okay? And two, which
I mean adult as in pornographic.
Adult.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking rainbow. I'll make fireworks with you, my love. Pull your knickers up. Now, the same thing as the music with the rainbows. It's a fucking rainbow in the sky, and it exists. How fucking brilliant is that? Firstly, it had to rain, yeah? Big fan of rain, especially from indoors. Okay, not if it's raining indoors, that'd be rubbish. You've got issues, mainly with your plumbing. But outside, and then light, and the light bouncing off that big fucking glowing ball in the sky that is the source of all life on this planet, if not conversations, is bouncing through there. The angle has to be precise. That it goes in through. It bounces off the other side of the little tiny teardrop of rain, and it makes it really pretty.
Jack, up until about 3 weeks ago, I would have agreed with you. But 3 weeks ago, I was standing on a sunny day on my patio outside, on my balcony.
That's a lovely patio.
I was watering my plants with a little spray can. And I noticed that if I angled the spray can at a certain point and sprayed continually, I could create my own rainbows. And I fundamentally lost all respect for the process. It lost all that mystery. I was like, I can do what God does. And if I can do it, it's pretty much not anything to comment on, is it? Like any of the other things I achieve. So at that point, I became jaded to rainbows.
If you can make fucking rainbows, we don't need to worry about these word searches. We will make millions from the rainbows.
Can't really sell rainbows.
Well, not with that attitude. Of course you can't. You've got to find a market. There must be places that don't have no rain. So we'll give them some bloody bowls where they like it or not. I just don't know why I went West Country there, but it felt right. Often the voice comes before the words, okay? So I've said this before. I start the sentences and I don't know where they're going, which is incredibly exciting for me, but can be quite dull for you as a person hearing them, and then someone who's listening back to a record. Mm. We're recording this in the same way they do sort of the US Bill of Rights.
Is this a problem for you in job interviews, Jack?
Well, I've never really had one. So I often am very good at compartmentalising, and that's why I got the job at Compartments R Us. and then people realise over a later thing that I'm not very good if I've not talked to anyone in the day. It goes, there's too many things happening.
What have you been doing today?
I've been trying to help little people read. And I don't mean dwarves, because they're very good at literacy. Usually. You get a thick dwarf.
So what you've What you're saying is that although you are able to compartmentalise and at a job interview would be able to give concise and clear answers...
Yes.
You haven't sought fit to use that compartment here today with me.
What I did there, I didn't listen to the whole question and answered. So if this was an interview, can I take that initial yes back?
You've not got the job, Jack.
Shit, what was the job?
The job was sucking my balls.
Oh, ball bags is what I've missed out on sucking. And I could probably fit two or three, maybe four.
Of not eyeballs.
Your balls.
I haven't got that many.
One of your balls is slightly larger than the other three. Is that normal?
Now, Jack, focus. I want you to tell me the one thing that you have identified that you hate. And explain that to me. It seems there's something about recycling here.
It's, well, there's a specific example that that I've listed. It may be part of a wider growing issue.
Mm.
I live in a terraced house of which there are three flats. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've got a rental possibility. That's not how people phrase it. I'm renting a flat. Okay. And there was a. Originally there was two bins, and now that's gone to one bigger bin from the council, okay? So on a Wednesday morning, the hard-working people that work the Lambeth refuse collection, they'll come down our street, sometimes singing a little song, okay? One of them sang, "My old man's a dustman." I can only assume he went into the family business, okay?
Is that another one of your jokes that you've crowed in?
No.
You made that up.
I've literally made that up.
That was a bad lip.
A, to say joke was very charitable of you.
Mm.
And B, to say that actually came from my brain.
Okay, good work.
Or it may not. It may come from someone else. The ether. Have you got any ether? That will clear the cold right out.
Focus.
There's bright lights. I can just see a pub in the distance, and it just looks lovely.
I'm going to pull the curtain in a second.
Pull the curtain and pull the plug.
Focus.
Focus. Oh, what to focus? Recycling. Yeah, they leave the bags out. And if it's on a Tuesday, you have to put them out the night before because no one gets up early enough to put them out in the morning. You don't want to miss. You don't do it the Wednesday morning because you might miss. You just convey that I am waving my hands because I'm already getting quite passionate about it. Okay, hands are being waved. Is that correct?
Confirmed.
And so on a Tuesday night, often I'll come back from my gig and I'll just put the bags out. And if you're there, you just take all the bags, don't you? Of course you do. There's all the bags, because otherwise that recycling, if that's not taken out, is going to stay there. Okay, it's going to stay there for another week. And okay, it's your recyclables, okay, it's cardboard, okay? A cat's not, or a fox isn't going to go into that, but it's still going to stay there, and you've got a bag of rubbish outside your house. The other two flats will only take their bags out. Oh, it's all been waiting in the same area. Oh, yeah, just under the little bush, little place we've got. And they'll only take their bags.
So you put all your collective recycling for the entire complex in one place. And the point is, at a certain point in the week, it needs to be transported to another place.
Just outside, just out on the curb. Out of the curb, okay? Hard working man, he's picking up rubbish. He doesn't have to go into everyone's individual.
So it'd when you take your bags, you take everyone else's bags.
Of course I do. Why wouldn't I?
That's your gripe.
Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I?
Are you auditioning for Game of Thrones right now?
Yes. Winter is coming. Winter is coming, so put your fucking bins out. And they don't do it, and it drives me fucking wild. Mm. All it would do is to. The human hand is an incredible thing. Often, if I'm collecting glasses or moving them around, you can pick up maybe seven glasses with your one hand, and you can hold one glass and something else with the other fingers as well. Really good. All it would take is just to like use the other little two fingers, just to grab a corner of the bag that's there as well, just take them out. And they don't do it, and it's really petty, but it's just, why? I don't get why you wouldn't do that. Why wouldn't you? If you're listening, why wouldn't you do it?
Do you have a similar problem with people that approach the washing up, the communal washing up, and only wash up their dishes, take out everyone else's, put them to the side?
I've been in house shares, and I have done it all. I've done it all, but also, that's a little bit more, there's...
You, sir, are a hypocrite.
I sound like a hypocrite. But I'd say most of the time I do.
Oh, I see.
I'm unquestionably a hypocrite. Mm. There's very few subjects I won't want someone else to follow a different rule that I'm not willing to do myself. Mm-hmm. Very few areas where I don't want people to do differently to how I would say.
Mm.
Politics, religion, any of those big-hitting areas, I'm very much a hypocrite. And yeah, no, I'll do washing up, but sometimes if it's a big house share, if it's a repeat offender, if it's Larry leaves his plate a lot, which is an unusual surname for anyone to have, but if that is, then maybe. But this is more... This is slightly different because this task requires very little additional. In some respects, it's difficult to pick out just your bags from that collection and put them out. And the other thing, they'll just put loose rubbish in the bin. Loose rubbish in the bin without a black bin bag. They'll take one look at that and say, I'm not shifting that. That's not in my bloody ruddy work contract. The union's got me new conditions and I ain't shifting it. And not all of them speak like that, but very much the words and sentiments would be correct. Mm. And they'll leave it. Like today, they've left most of our bin because they just put little tiny bits inside there. Buy some black bin bags.
That's quite classist, that accent you just did there.
Yes.
You know, how would you feel if I was telling a similar story and I started just doing an Indian accent in the middle of it? Just characterising a whole bunch of people as...
But you can do a really good Indian accent, and it's a shame you've stopped doing that in public.
My Indian accent is well-renowned.
That sounds very much like my voice that you did earlier.
Yeah. No, your voice is a bit more like this. A bit more spitting and bile coming out.
Oh, I love the Welsh accent.
You've also listed parks.
Fucking hate parks.
Hmm. Why?
Why? First off, most of them, bandstands. Yeah? This day and age, make it digital.
Mm.
Yeah? I want a screen. I want a little bit of cover, okay? I'm not mad for the rain, unless it's producing rainbows, okay? What happens if you have rain at night? No fireworks. Yeah, no one likes a soggy firework, okay? Eh? And I had an extra sound in there that I didn't need to, but it felt punctuation. Yeah, and just all that bloody green.
But it's a place where children can play and dance.
Hate children, hate dance.
Then why are you teaching them to read?
Because I think they should have the opportunity to enrol in dance classes, where then I shout at them.
Dance classes. Is that what you do with your day?
I have it on good authority that the rhythm's going to get you. Okay, so I think you should be prepared for the rhythm getting you, for attacking. If the rhythm attacks, you should respond.
You've begun to speak in riddles, so I'm going to move on. How long has this hatred of parks engulfed you?
Literally minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Literally minutes. I think, from memory, we sort of arbitrarily decided... that it should become a hate.
No, I've got it written here.
Oh, okay, my apologies. My apologies. If it's written down, I'm not one to argue with that.
When was the last time you went to a park?
1989.
And how old were you at that point?
I was just approaching my 50th birthday. Mm-hmm. No, that's not right. I was approaching my 5th birthday. My 15th. It had a 5 in it. It was 5. My 5th birthday.
Did you despise parks on that occasion? Or has this been growing?
To say park is quite charitable. It was an area that was set aside for recreation, okay? So there was more bark than there would just be on a tree. It was on the floor. So they'd taken sort of the walls of trees, chopped it up, and placed it on the ground for health and safety. And so that really, even then, as a young old person, because we all become old, with almost except Bruce Forsyth, who stayed 80 for 3 million years, and even then I thought yeah, it swings and roundabouts. It's mainly swings. There were no roundabouts. Roundabouts would be a rubbish place for a park. Too many cars around roundabouts. I just thought, oh, is this slide all there is? Is this metal chute, this fun metal chute, all there is to this park?
What's your opinion of popular sitcom Parks and Recreation?
I think it's great because it's taken the parks and added a lot of administration to it. There's a lot of paperwork behind the parks, okay? Do I agree with their policy that there should be parks? No, of course I don't. I hate parks.
What's your opinion of filmmaker Park Chan-wook?
I definitely am aware that he's made films.
Okay, Jack, I want you to focus. I want you to really think about the rationale. I want you to give us some compelling reasoning for your next and last choice on your love list. Go.
What is it?
It's Douglas Adams', piece of work. A very famous one.
The Hitchhiking Guide to the Galaxy.
No, it's The Hitchhiker's Guide.
The Hitchhiker's.
Yeah.
The Hitchhiker's.
No, focus.
Focus. In the room. Yeah, it's Douglas Adams. I think maybe I love him more than the story itself because of all his work. He's just really, really funny. I think at the crux of it, he was able to combine two things that I struggle to hold in my little tiny, 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 tiny brain.
Focus.
Tiny brain. Is the, just like the enormity of everything. Okay, so we'd like this, just the fact that based on the best understandings that we have and what we've been able to observe, that this place is bloody, ruddy massive, yet individually we're like almost, we're forced to see it this very myopic standpoint. Of seeing it from our own point of view. So you've got the very, very human aspect of it, which is the way people see something, and then the very, very big as well, and he sums it up just so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Were you a fan of the TV series?
I came to it through the book. I read the book first,
mm-hmm.
and then I quite liked the film that he had the scripting that was the... same guy did Son of Rambo.
So you do like the film?
I do like the film.
See, that's a common... thing that to say that the film is a disgrace.
Yeah, they definitely Hollywoodified it a little bit with a love story. But as far as I'm aware, Douglas Adams had a input to the script right up until he died. And it's famously he didn't really like he did like Deadlines. His quote is, "I like the sound they make as they swoosh over my head," which just sort of sums it up really in why he was nice. But he just seems a really all right bloke, really. He just looked at the universe in that way. I just thought that kind of imagination is really fascinating. I've watched back it's really weird because I'm trying to think of other examples of a work that's been in so many forms. It's kind of evolved and mutated into, because obviously there was the radio series, then the TV, then books of it, and you've even got the other guy writing the sixth book of the trilogy. And taking it on, and they're obviously great characters because people love them, and it's a writer who sort of just reflects my outlook a bit in that way. So it's really, really funny and turns a phrase that he writes sentences that you've just not seen before, and it's very individual, which is always like in comedy. There's so much debate about, you know, the forms, and I can't remember who said it, but, you know, whatever you call a joke is an amount of words or actions that then leads up to a laugh. It doesn't matter if it's a one-liner or it's a long story or it's mime or whatever, it's a joke.
Yeah, and, I've never had much truck with those people who insist they don't do jokes. It seems to be quite a cool comedian thing to say, is that I don't do jokes, which usually means that, well, I don't do very obvious set up punch jokes, but what I do, everyone tells jokes.
Yeah, it's just that there are lots of. It's a story.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just a story.
Everything's got beats, comic beats.
And sort of the Facebook debates that rage about, you know, hard hitting comedians or comedians telling the truth never really had any truck with me. I want the best people at that end and the best people at the, you know, what's mocked as the jam and badgers end of it. What I like is a thing that I've not heard before. So if it's a joke about a badger, that's fantastic. If it's a joke about, you know, Doug Stanhope doing something really dark that I've not heard those words in that order before, I think that's really interesting. And that's going to get a laugh from me. Obviously, I'm in a position where I've probably consumed a lot more comedy than maybe the average person. So maybe that's a natural thing that I've gone before that I've heard, you know. I've heard people talk about stuff fairies, but that's an interesting thing where you do this, like. And for me, there's as much joy as a silly joke about a unicorn, which means absolutely nothing, than there is, you know, about a very, you know, Bill Burr doing a routine about hitting a woman or something like that. If it's done in a way that's interesting and I've not heard it before, then I'm going to laugh, and that's going to be good.
There is a lot of kind of snobbery in comedy. I think it does go both ways. I think there are basically what people have got to stop doing is identifying that there's some kind of true form of comedy and forgetting that actually the strength of comedy is in variety, is in the fact that there's something for everybody. You wouldn't want one form of comedy to be the type of comedy everyone does. It would be a fucking nightmare. If everyone was Doug Stanhope, it would be shit.
And if everyone was Tim Vine, it would be unbearable. I've seen Tim Vine, one of the best performers I've ever seen. And it was just like, from start to finish, it's an absolute assault. Mm. And you've laughing at one joke, you've had five more in there, and it's brilliant. But as you said, it would be exhausting, absolutely exhausting, if everyone was like him as well. But yeah, it's just like, what's funny, is it? I think the problem is we especially if you're performing comedy, you spend so much time thinking about it, and it kind of does take over your main thoughts, that you kind of get a little bit blindsided. Is that the right term? I don't know. I'm not very good at those words things. To just, yeah, the fact that you want to say some words and people to laugh, because that's a nice feeling. Mm. The shortest distance between two people is laughter or penetrative sex. Okay, so there's two things, isn't there?
But you don't want them at the same time, ideally.
Well, you know.
You'd think that double the closeness would happen, but actually the effect is. Yeah.
Take it out of me now. Exactly. It's usually what happens. Mm. I mean, on the
to
on,
you, to you, to
me,
every time,
and which is weird, because I'm on my own
every single time.
Both single times, I'm left on my own, and then I'm asked to get off the bloody bus. I hate myself.
No, that's a joke.
I hate myself.
So, Jack, we've come to the end. What do you feel that you've learned through this experience?
I've learned that two men in a room may not be the best way to learn.
Do you feel as though the audience has gotten to know you at all through this process, kind of know what sort of person you are?
I think they've got to know Amy, but not possibly me, or even the me.
Is this a natural defence that you put up to prevent anybody from really getting to know what you're like?
I would say it's more an unnatural defence that I've constructed.
You phrase that sentence as though you've said something with some meaning, but
did I
you haven't, Jack.
Haven't I? I'm devoid of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I had fun. I think that's nice. I've learned that I had fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely had fun. Fun. F-U-N. Fun. 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 Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming.
It's
been a pleasure.
It was really exciting, and I liked the bit where we were talking.
I'm sorry that I bullied you slightly.
I felt it was justified.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it was justified, but I'm sorry, nonetheless.
You're
I don't like being forced into that position. I feel ugly about myself.
So you'd, in fact, want me to apologise?
Why did you make me?
I'm sorry for putting you in the position where you felt sorry that you had to, quite rightly, I add, bully me.
Why are you so abusable?
Can I have my middle name back, please?
No.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of the second series of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme with Jack Samuel Warner. I'm excited to be back. I will do my best to make the episodes more regular than they have been for Series 2. And we have a lot of great guests coming up. We've got Simon Kane and Katie Lane. We've got Rick Murtaugh, Toby Morishanu, the Black Sparrows, Darius Davies, Alex Chapman, Joz Norris, my mummy, Janet Bettesworth, Gary Trow. We've got all sorts of people, many, many more than I have listed, so I hope you stick around and enjoy that. As always, if you would like to leave a comment or some sort of rating on the iTunes page, that would be greatly appreciated. But for now, I will see you next week. Ngoo!